Welcome to the Deucecast. That is episode 16, Podcast Salvation. That's the Deucecast, T-H-E, the is important. I'm your host, Dave, and this is my co-host, Mikey. Say hello, Mikey.
I feel salved.
Salved?
Solved?
Solved?
Salved?
Saved?
Saved. I think it's salved,
yeah.
Mike.
Hey guys, what's up?
Up in the Noog Deucecast Studios North, say hello to Matt. What's up, Matt?
I feel salved as well.
Well, we all feel a little safe, actually. We're in the basement of the Deucecast Studios. It's storming and thundering outside.
So, it's bad.
We're
it's
hoping
brutal.
That the house doesn't collapse on us. Is it raining up there in the Noog?
As far as I know, no. It was clear all day. So.
Okay, so we're hoping everything goes well. Don't forget to find us on the usual interweb places like Twitter and Facebook and iTunes and, of course, on Stitcher. And,
that's right.
And, you know, one thing that we really want you guys to do, tell a friend. If you like our show, say,
yes.
Hey, pass our show along. And, you know, we're a little irreverent. And I think Tommy put it as we're a podcast with pop culture repercussions. And I like that. We'll go with that. So tell your friends about us and how good looking we are. So we're going to talk about all kinds of fun things tonight, including Harry Potter. We'll get to that a little bit later on.
That's right.
Of course, some movies. I've got a great buried treasure for you. Michael's got some great music to introduce to you. Matt's going to be bringing on some trailers. It's kind of a little trailer park area we'll be talking about. So.
That's right.
So anyway, let's talk about the week, though. Michael, how has your week been?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I am devastated, personally devastated, that J-Lo and Mark Antony have separated. It's really gotten to me this week. I don't know if I can function, really. It's always on my mind, and I just hope they can work things out.
It's pretty rough.
Have they divorced yet, or is she waiting for it tonight?
Oh, God.
Good Lord.
Come on, man.
What?
Why'd you do that?
What?
Anyways, but definitely my coolest thing of the week was Harry Potter. Involved Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. And it also was sort of an uncool thing for my week as well. It's sort of a mismatch of stuff happened. I haven't been to a midnight show in a while. And so I braved the midnight show, which was probably an issue. Harry Potter, I could not have fathomed the madness that occurred for the midnight show.
That's one of the reasons I didn't go at midnight.
So I've heard.
The last midnight show, and this is how long ago it was X2. So X-Men 2 was the last midnight show that I've been to. Yeah, and there wasn't anything going. There was no lines. There was no...
nobody dressed up as Wolverine.
Nobody dressed up. they did give away t-shirts, so I thought that was cool. So we get there at about 10:45. The movie starts at 12:01, and packed.
That's a pretty good lead there,
dude.
Mike,
packed, ridiculously packed. More people at Patton Creek than I've ever seen before.
Did you already get your tickets?
Oh yeah, we already had the tickets, but that didn't really matter. We got there, you know, like I said, 10:45. Waited in line for over an hour to even get into the theater.
Wow,
at 12. Well, it may have been, 11:59, they tore our tickets, and Ashley missed most of the previews getting popcorn and stuff. I told her I wasn't going to miss the previews. We ended up having to sit in the lower section of the theater
in front
of the bar, off to the right. It wasn't that bad, you know, sitting down there. Luckily, we didn't see 3D. That would have been probably
brutal.
Too close for 3D, but... so that was sort of really uncool, having to wait outside for an hour and a half, and it was a pretty balmy night in Alabama.
Have you guys ever been to a midnight show where they let you in before like 11:45?
Oh yeah, I've been there. I mean, I've been to midnight shows before where you get in like at 11 or something, and I'm trying to think of, there was a movie
I've had
to
stand outside at every one, even Star Wars, all of them.
I haven't. Well, X2, we did not have to stand outside.
Yeah, there was.
They let us go in.
I want to think that there was a movie that Michael and I went to and met up for at a midnight show or for something, and we waited in line for a little while.
Was it Robot Jocks?
Maybe it wasn't 11 o'clock or midnight. Maybe it was 11 or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know.
Time ago.
Yeah. Well, and then that, you're talking about maybe out in Alabaster, the city I live in. We went and saw Snakes in a Plane.
Oh, that could be it.
Yeah,
that could
and it
be
was
it.
Like a 10:30 show.
Yeah,
so it was
and we waited in line. The theater was packed with like 40 people.
At least.
at
least.
there was 7 people in line. Of course, it was a theater of like 12 theaters. So they may all be going to different places, but you know.
But one other thing that I wanted to mention, I promised a listener, his name's Jim. I won't say his last name. But he is part owner. He and his family own a small... a Christian bookstore out in Jasper, Alabama. We all know the economy's you know, not great right now. And, I mean, freaking Borders shut down. Well, yeah. They filed bankruptcy. Yeah. 399 stores shutting down. So, as you can imagine, Jim is trying anything he can to keep the store out or store open. He's using some social media outlets and whatnot. But I just wanted to shout out, if you live in that area, Jasper, Alabama, or if you're driving by and you want to pull over and you're dying for that Pray for Rain retrospective or the new Shane and Shane album. Just
Pray for Rain.
Stop by
PFR.
The Berean Christian Resource Center, and you can follow them at Berean CRC on Twitter. But just, you know, trying to help out a local business.
Yeah, we'll put their link on our website.
There's no, if we're not here for something, I mean, we're at least here to help the little guy out. I mean, we're a pretty small podcast, so I want to try and help Jim out and just give him a shout out. He also has an eBay store, so even if you don't live in town, you can look him up on eBay. Again, that's the Berean Christian Resource Center. Follow them at Berean.
Is it Berean?
Yeah, that too. Christian CRC. So it's BEREANCRC is the Twitter feed. But and he's also got a blog, christianbookstoreguy.blogspot.com. So
he might carry a book I've been reading recently called Erasing Hell by Francis Chan.
He most definitely does. I mean,
that's an excellent book.
Yeah, he most definitely does. But he's a really, really good guy. And Jim, you know, I love you, man. You're not just Brooke's boyfriend to me. You're Jim, and you're awesome. So let's just, you know, our listeners, be strong and go on eBay if you don't want to go to Jasper and buy some stuff from Jim. Help him out. If he was on Amazon, I'd say go through our website, go to Amazon, help him out. But we love it. So anyways, I just wanted to do a little bit of a shout out. Not funny or anything, but although the Pray for Rain retrospective, I mean, that's a classic album. So or Petra.
Petra,
yes.
Retrospective.
Yeah, some classic Petra,
maybe some John Schlitz solo work and everything next to the Phil Joel aisle. Yes.
So, anyways, I just wanted to
White Cross
give a little. I promised him I'd give him a shout out. So there you go, Jim, and thanks so much, man.
Very cool, good deal.
So, Matt, what about you, dude? How was your week?
It was pretty great. I tell you what, my highlight of the week absolutely is being a dad. Nora, like every week, she turned 8 weeks. She turned 8 years old today. She's like Jack. No, she turned 8 weeks old today, and she has started doing, like, just seeing the development. You know, like she would just kind of like look around before, and you couldn't tell what she was looking at. She started really making eye contact this week a lot. She started smiling a lot more. We took her to the pool Monday, her first time swimming. And it was awesome. It was so funny. We got a bunch of pictures up on Facebook and took some video of it. Are you guys there?
Yeah, dude.
We're here. We're listening. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. Right. Since we're having a stormy night, I wanted to be sure.
It's pretty stormy.
but it was awesome. It was absolutely incredible. And let's see. I guess uncool. Oh, I'll tell you what. One other cool for the week. You know, last week we talked about our Jetta being on its last legs. I broke down and took the car over. I was able to drive it over to my parents' house.
Did you get a flux capacitor installed?
No, there's none available locally.
No diesel. No diesel.
Well, yeah, maybe you should try Berean Christian Resource Center. They may have them.
They might have it on their eBay store.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was not able to find a Mr. Fusion either. So that's a tough one.
Nice.
Magic bullet. But there, we were able to figure out what the problem was, and it's luckily not a busted head gasket or anything like that. And we ordered the parts for it, and it was a little bit of a pain in the butt to remove them, but my dad and I are going to put them in. And the parts ended up costing, from the website we went to, $11 for like four different parts.
Awesome, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Like, the list price for one of the parts was like $33. Their price was $4.17.
Nice.
So, I mean, it's the exact same. It's like a exact same piece of plastic. It's just, you know, not gotten through the Volkswagen, you know, dealership or whatever. So hopefully we'll do that. And I think we've also figured out, because this car has had some major electrical issues, not had air conditioning for like ever. It's so hot. I'm like covered in sweat, you know, whenever I get anywhere. And we cannot carry Nora in it.
Oh, of course.
With
right.
No
right.
AC.
No, you wouldn't want to do that.
Maybe in the winter, but not in the summer.
Right.
And So we figured out a way how we're going to kind of like, you just make our own AC switch. Yeah, AC switch, possibly, like just run a, because it'll work. It's just the electrical issue won't let it come on. Like the switch doesn't get to the air conditioning.
Right.
So we're going to like run our own wires and put like our own like ghetto switch.
Sweet.
You know, like on the dashboard.
Hey, whatever works, man.
I really want to get like a light switch or something that looks as absolutely awesome. Like busted as possible. You know, or either that or like one like on the Enterprise, you know, they got like the fader switch, you know, Sulu uses. I want something like huge like that just to like crank on the air conditioning, like right there on the front of the dash.
That'd be great.
But anyway, that's cool. As far as uncool stuff goes, let's see. We watched several movies. I'm trying to think if any of them were really that bad. You know what? Not really. We watched Skyline was not good.
Yeah.
We watched that on Netflix.
That got horrible reviews.
Yeah, and it lasted about 3 weeks at the theater and it was out.
Yeah, it was not good. We watched it was pretty low budget, but considering how low budget it was, the effects are good. It's just not a good movie. We watched Rango. We rented that on Blu-ray from Redbox because it's like $1.50. And it's pretty amazing as far as animation goes, and it's a good movie, but it's really for like adults.
What,
you know what I mean?
Was that a DreamWorks thing or what was that?
I think it was DreamWorks.
Oh, okay. I mean, I know it wasn't Disney, I can't remember. So.
Well, I know that
it was Nickelodeon. It was Nickelodeon.
I know that Rio and Rango came out about the same time, and I think Rio was DreamWorks, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt. It was Nickelodeon, if I'm not
Rio
mistaken.
Was Big Sky or Red Sky or what, you know, the ones that are
okay.
Big Sky, like the ones Ice that Age. Did Robots and Ice Age, yeah. But then we also watched I Am Number 4, which
Alex
rented.
Pettifer.
Yes, and Timothy Oliphant as a supporting role.
Yeah, that'll work.
And the guy who played Kimi on Lost was the bad alien.
He also played the Blob in the Wolverine movie.
Oh,
he did.
Yeah, you're right.
He did. Bob.
You just call me a blob?
No, I said bub.
But
that was a forced joke in there, by the way. So
yeah, it was. It was ridiculous. And the fact that Will I Am was even in the movie was also pretty forced. But anyway, I Am Number 4 was okay. It had some really cool action scenes, but overall it was a typical teenage bull crap, you know. But I guess, you know, overall everything's been going pretty good. All of our stuff's we do. Okay, here's my uncle. I have decided it's real fast.
Yes.
Zookeeper?
No, I didn't see that. We have Yellow Jackets on our back porch.
Ooh.
And I went to Home Depot and they're like swarming everywhere and our cats are going crazy trying to get out it's like a big sliding glass door. And our cats are going crazy trying to get to them. And occasionally one will get in, like work its way in somehow. We can't even figure out how. One will work its way in and then I kill it. But like one stung Chloe in the face, our cat, one of our cats. But I went to Home Depot and got this huge can of like spray. It's supposed to like kill them for like weeks, you know? And I just barely cracked the door and stuck the thing out and just sprayed the crap out of this whole area where they were, you know, and they're just like buzzing, buzzing, buzzing all over the place. And I went and looked underneath. I can't find where the nest is, but they're still there. Like I sprayed it. It smells just like pure diesel fuel. I mean, I was all over it. I don't know. I have no idea. I've sprayed it twice. So hopefully maybe it's just like a delayed reaction. You know, maybe they realize they can't go back in there, but they come back because they've already been there. Anyway, hopefully, fingers crossed, they'll be gone because I hate Yellow Jackets.
Dude, and I'm not trying to top your Yellow Jacket thing, but a friend of mine, April, she has bats in her belfry. Literally. I mean, she's got 24 bats that they're having to get an exterminator to come out and remove. It's going to cost her $1,400.
How do you know the exact number of bats?
I don't know, dude. Well, I'm guessing the exterminator came out there, counted the bats, said, here's my quote. Do you want me to remove them?
There's probably like seven bats, and he's like,
no,
it looks like
I'll tell you how he did it. He counted the guano.
Yes. Good call. It was funny. She posted about it on Facebook, and she said that she needs to try and get in touch with Billy the Exterminator, so maybe it would be free if the show came out. Sort of like Extreme Home Makeover, but you know, Billy the Exterminator coming out and get the bats.
From A&E.
I don't think I've ever seen an episode of him dealing with bats. I don't know.
That's a pretty crazy
It's been a while
show,
since I've had cable, so. Although it's on Netflix, but
yeah. Speaking of Netflix shows, have you guys? I keep seeing this on there, the Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard.
What
of it.
Is that?
I'm not going to watch it. I don't.
It looks terrible.
I've got. I don't have enough time to watch anything.
There are like 20
seasons.
It's like
a Canadian comedy mockumentary television series, created and directed by Mike Clattenburg, and it's focusing on the misadventures of a group of Trailer Park. Trailer park residents, and some of them are ex-convicts, and they're living in the Sunnyvale Trailer Park located in Nova Scotia. That's all really all I know.
Well, I mean, they're Canadian, eh? So, I mean, Dave, how was your
week? Did
you
just
make
that up?
No, actually, it's on Deucipedia.
Deucipedia.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I'll run through a couple of uncool things here just to talk about. First of all, I saw one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. And I've seen a lot of movies, and most movies I do like. And I'm like you, Matt. I mean, there are bad movies I enjoy, but there are some movies that are just bad.
So this is below
craptastic? This is below craptastic. Wow. This is just crap. Starring Mike Epps, Ice Cube, and Young Jeezy.
Oh.
The movie is called...
All About the Benjamins?
The Janky Promoters.
What?
J-A-N-K-Y... Promoters. And the movie starts out with a definition of janky, like shady or whatever. So apparently, like, Mike Epps and Ice Cube play these concert promoters who are trying to get Young Jeezy to come play a concert. Young Jeezy's in the movie, and it is terrible.
When did this stuff come out?
A couple years ago, 2005. It is awful. And I saw it like on Stars a couple times. I'd flip through the channels and I'm like, what is the janky? You know, so I was like, you know, in the afternoon, I'm at home, not a whole lot going on. I've already got my show stuff done. So I just turned it on and watched it. And I watched
that
the
is
whole
right
thing.
Up my alley.
It is awful. Guys, it is so bad.
Guys, I'd like to say, I think Sean's our janky promoter.
Yeah, he is. Sean Sharp just walked in. What's up, big Sean?
Mike, you're that resource center janky promoter.
Hey, dude. I mean, I'm trying to help a brother out. That's all I'm saying.
So, also, I get a couple of posts on my Facebook wall that tells me that, your blog is taking over my Facebook wall. And then, of course, Mike texts
me.
He's like, I think your Facebook account's been hacked.
Yeah.
Well, what I've been doing on my my blog page, broadwaydave.blogspot.com.
Speaking of janky promotion.
You know, I'm doing something called the Summer of Blogging. And basically, I'm putting up like 5 or 6 posts a week. And the goal is to put like 70 or 80 posts through the summer all the way up to Labor Day. And so it's just a constant stream of just writing things and posting things or whatever. Well, Facebook is supposed to be importing them like every day or so. What they're doing, and this has happened twice now, is Facebook will wait and then import like 8 or 9 posts at one time, even 10 posts at one single time. Bring them all over. So if you're on my Clouds of My Coffee Facebook page, you get everything on your wall at one time, and it's pretty obnoxious. And I feel kind of bad for people who are, you know, who get that. And Michael's like, your Facebook page has been hacked, and I'm like, no, it's not been hacked. It's not my fault. It's Zuckerberg. Darn you, Zuckerberg. So you know. So anyway, that's what happened.
If that's not a white person problem, I don't.
It
know
is a
what
white
is.
Person problem. Went to the eye doctor this week. I don't think I'll ever go back to this particular eye doctor because her bedside manner sucks. It's pretty janky. So that was not fun. But all of that can be wiped away by this. We went to the doctor this past Tuesday, my wife and I, for our baby being born in December. And saw the ultrasound and saw our little baby there in the ultrasound. We saw the spine, we saw the heart, we saw the mouth, everything, sucking his little thumb.
Wait, is it he?
We don't know.
Oh, okay.
Well, funny you should ask that.
Yes.
But we saw the baby sucking the thumb, you know, and just kind of gurgling the little fluid or whatever, stretching his legs and kind of curling up. It was the cutest thing I think I've ever seen. I was just stood there just amazed by watching this. And, of course, we're not going to find out what the baby is. The technician can find out, but the technician, of course, won't tell us. But we figured out that we can't tell anyway, even if we wanted to, because as soon as the spotlight went on this little baby, the baby's hands went straight to between his legs. So we're wondering, Stephanie thinks, oh, well, look, it's so cute. The baby doesn't want us to know what it is. And I'm thinking,
that's right.
The hand went straight between the legs. It's probably a boy. So so we've kind of gone back and forth on that. But just keeping it real, dog. Keeping it real.
Yeah,
anyway, that was probably the best thing I've had in several weeks. Just
awesome.
It's so just precious. I mean, like, that's our baby. And
precious.
It freaks me out because I told my wife, I'm like, honey, you're going to have somebody calling you mommy in about you know, a year. And
I bet she's
daddy and just, oh, you know, so it's kind of freaky. But anyway.
It's cool.
With as many romance novels as your wife reads, I bet she never thought she'd hear somebody call her mommy.
I don't know. Well, yeah. I don't know.
Is there, but, that doesn't make sense at all.
To keep the explicit tag off, I won't even make any further jokes. Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, we could.
But speaking of crap, Mike's Music Minute.
I'm going to stop doing this if you guys keep.
Dude, it's a highlight of my show, man.
I'm going to start pandering to Matt's musical listening.
Just give us something good. That's all
these are the jokes. These are the jokes.
Hopefully this is going to be good. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But
give us something that more than like 100 people in the world have heard of.
Well, a lot more than 100 have heard of this. So the name of the band's Broken Bells. It is featuring James Mercer of the Shins. If you haven't heard
like Roy D. Mercer,
if you haven't heard of the Shins, then come on. And it's also Danger.
I've heard the name of the Shins. I have no. I could name no song okay. from the Shins.
Danger Mouse is also with James Mercer. He's a big time producer. He's produced
Gnarls Barkley.
Some of my favorite albums in the past couple years. He produced Beck's most recent album. He also produced the last two. Oh geez, I just blanked.
Andy's half of Gnarls Barkley.
No, but their album was called.
What about Pinfolds?
I can't remember the name of the other band.
Pinfolds 5.
Yeah, exactly. But they had an EP come out earlier this year, March of this year, called Mayron Fields. So their full album came out last year, but this is an EP called Mayron Fields. The first song that we're going to listen to is Mayron Fields. So here we go.
I love it. This is the best stuff you played in forever.
It is.
It sounds
definitely.
Great. I love it. Oh, you had to ruin it. I feel like this is a song I heard on that Seth Green movie, Airborne, when he was doing the skateboarding.
That was a good movie.
Credits are rolling and this song's on.
All right, so that was the first few song. Second song we're going to listen to is Windows.
I mean, I've got no comment. Nobody puts their best music on an EP. Nobody does.
The Avett Brothers have had several EPs. I mean, I'm just saying. But anyways,
I just looked over and looked at the Skype feed, and there's Matt holding his head in his hands like, I'm miserable right now.
I'm not complaining. I mean, there is some pleasantness, okay, but it's like...
The last song is Heartless Empire.
It's better than John Bon Vare.
It is.
Sounds like modern Beatles in their drug phase.
Yeah, the voice is unfit to
run. All right, so that was Broken Bells. Go to our website, thedeucedcast.com. Click through, purchase on Amazon if you show please. But anyways, thanks for that, guys.
Yay
me.
I didn't rip it apart.
Did you like any of it for real, though? I mean,
it's just as pleasant as like 90% of music. But there's nothing, literally nothing about it was that like.
I won't remember
crap,
it tomorrow.
That's good.
I will not remember it tomorrow.
Wow, that something sets this apart from all the other music.
It's not Toad.
No, something puts this with all the other music.
You're right. It is. It's not Toad.
It's not
but
Toad
nothing
at all.
Can be
or Hootie.
I mean, or Hootie. Nothing can be even closer to either. One of them, but
or whatever that crappy band is that does the Grey's Anatomy music.
PSAP. Yeah. Hey, I've got the song. You want to hear it? Cozy in the Rocket.
No. I'm sorry.
We'll actually get to that later because I've got a great Grey's Anatomy update.
Oh, that's
sorry. I mentioned that.
That's
crap.
Too bad. All right.
Okay.
Feed us, Matt.
So, Smorg time. All right, guys. So, as any of you guys know, if anybody out there that is informed, the Dark Knight Rises trailer premiered this past weekend with the Harry Potter movie. And they showed, they've already released it online now, but it was like bootlegged like crazy through YouTube, through every possible service, and is taken down very soon.
Google Plus.
Did you guys see this trailer?
Oh, I saw the trailer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I saw it twice.
I've seen it once on the big screen.
I saw it on the big screen in front of Harry Potter.
Yep.
Yeah, I saw it once on the big screen, then I watched it again a couple times. But all the buzz really got me thinking about movie trailers, and I just kind of want to talk to you about, because I'm very interested in movie trailers. There's something about the ability to get you hyped up to see something, you know, the ability to trigger whatever it is in your brain to make you really want to see whatever that is, or something. Sometimes the trailer is for a movie you don't really care about. But it's just like, hey, that was a really cool trailer.
Well,
I want to see it again.
Like Zookeeper.
You know?
It's like the hook of a Broken Bells song. You just want to keep listening or keep watching in this case.
Good.
Right. Not interested.
I think you just ruined the smorg.
My bad.
But anyway, I just want to talk about some of the trailers that I really like over the years, and some of the trailers that I think were not quite as effective, and really most of those are really, really recent. But there are also cases of some like really movies that turned out to be crappy that had good trailers, and I've got one really big example of that. But there are a few kind of factors that kind of like feed me and make me really, really, really enjoy a trailer.
Are there factors?
There are not seven factors.
Factor seven?
I was just checking. Go ahead.
There are X amount of factors.
Okay, gotcha.
One of those is use of nostalgia. I mean, you've got so many remakes coming out. You got so many sequels coming out all the time. Like Batman, you know, Batman. And part of what the Batman trailer did is it kind of, you know, it revisits some of the Batman Begins stuff. You know, it revisits kind of the very beginning and some of Liam Neeson, you know, his lines, and then tries to kind of stack hype on top of that. And to me, I don't think it was really that effective. What did you guys think?
That particular trailer, I didn't dig. I mean, I didn't like it.
Dave, what about you?
Are we talking about the Batman trailer?
Yeah, I really didn't dig it that much.
I think it's fantastic.
I
love the way it's put together. I love what it's showing and what it's not showing you. I love the questions it's raising. It makes me want to see the movie. I want to know why Batman is standing in that alleyway punching those guys, and he looks frightened for the first time. You don't really see the villain. I think maybe Bane's in there somewhere for a second.
It's Bane.
You don't see him. I want to know why the commissioner, whatever, is laying in that hospital bed. Who's he talking to? He's talking to Batman? What happened to Batman? I want to know. I mean, I love the way the trailer's put together. I love the words interspersed in there, the conclusion of the trilogy. Let you know, this is it. We're done. And I think it's great.
Is there something about it, though, that makes you want to see it more than you already did?
I mean, I was going to see this movie regardless. You could have had Christian Bale sitting on a stool in his bad English accent, cursing at me, telling me what an idiot I am, and I would still go see this movie. Yeah.
Okay, well, let me give you an example of a movie that I knew I would go see.
Yeah.
But the trailer made me nearly crap my pants.
Transformers.
Star Wars Episode 3. Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
I remember this was right when I had started, I guess I was engaged to Stephanie at the time, or maybe just dating Stephanie. It was in, we went to see The Incredibles. Do you guys remember that?
I remember that.
We went together, like a big group of people.
And it was
one of the very first digital, you know, it was The Rave when it was like new, pretty new at least, you know, and it has like all digital shows. But we went to see it, and I went to see The Incredibles probably three times in the theater, partially not only because Incredibles was great, but partially because the Star Wars Episode 3 trailer teaser was at the beginning. And it starts out with Obi-Wan Kenobi from Episode 4 talking, doing the voiceover, and it shows some certain scenes of him talking about, you know, like what happened to Darth Vader, like what happened to Luke's father, how Darth Vader was his apprentice and he turned evil. And it just struck that like nostalgic chord. And then they stack on this like tons of awesome scenes. you know, for this movie. And honestly, I think I like the third movie. I think it was the best of the prequels, but I still think the trailer was way better than the movie.
Right.
Like, that trailer I will always remember because it was like, okay, this is totally like just hitting the geek nerve over and over and over again, you know, with like nostalgia, but bringing new stuff in. Same with Star Trek, like the 2009 Star Trek. You know, when they had that trailer in the very beginning of the trailer. Do you guys remember the trailer where the car is driving?
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and it looks like something old.
Yeah. Because
it looks
like why are we seeing a car at a Star Trek,
yeah,
you know, trailer?
Yeah, well, at first, you know, the car is driving. You don't even know it's Star Trek because it gives you no indication. If you had no idea in the theater, you know, and it drives off, the kid jumps out, and then the robot shows like this robot guy. And you're like, okay, now we're in the future, I guess. And he's like, what is your name, citizen? And he's like, James Tiberius Kirk. You're like, oh my gosh, this is freaking Star Trek.
Yeah,
you know, like, yeah. I will never forget that. But that whole trailer was just like, you know, just scene after scene after scene of awesomeness because you're already anticipating this. You've seen nothing about it. And then it's like, okay, now it's time to give you a little bit of information. You know, let's give you some scenes. You don't need anything else because you already know this exists, right?
Right, right.
That's why I don't like the Dark Knight. I didn't like the Dark Knight teaser. I rewatched it again. The teaser, you know, when they first announced it,
right,
the summer before it came out. I just thought it was really weak. It was a bunch of voiceover, you know, and it showed like the bat symbol, you know, expose and then explode. And then this one too, there's all it showed of the new movie besides the Commissioner Gordon laying there is literally 1 second of Batman standing up and putting his fists up. And that's like it.
Right.
Right.
And it showed like one flash of Bane's face. That's it. That's all it showed of the entire movie. And I guess I would have just wanted to see some, like a little bit more than that. Cause people have speculated so much out of that 1 second, which good hype. But like Dave, you're attributing like all these emotions to it and stuff, and all you see is him like barely stand up and lift his fist and kind of like shake. That's it. You don't see fear on his face, but you assume that that's there.
Do you not? But can you say that you didn't see fear on his face?
No, I don't think he was afraid.
I think he was.
Okay, well, but see, that's the thing. I mean, that's part of maybe, and maybe
well,
that
it
works
because we're talking about it.
Maybe that makes a good trailer. Anyway, I'll step back. Okay, there are more trailers I could talk about. I thought Batman Begins had a really good first trailer because it was drawn on the nostalgia and Nolan didn't need to just string you along like he is now. I mean, I have no doubt this movie is going to be incredible. Who knows, maybe one of the best movies ever, whatever. I just feel like the trailer is not so great. But nostalgia is a big one, okay? The next is showing you enough, like, very, very, very little information and getting you totally pumped.
Just piquing,
like,
your interest, basically.
Exactly. And I got a few examples of that. Cloverfield. Whenever Cloverfield first came out, at first it looks like some sort of, like, party going on, you know, this party movie. And then, you know, like, this shaking happens. They look out the window and, like, the head of the Statue of Liberty, like, flies across the city, you know, and lands. And that's all you get. And you didn't even get a name at first of the movie.
That trailer,
remember that?
Was
amazing. It was like 1808 or whatever.
Yeah. That trailer was fan-freaking-tastic.
It's one of my favorites of all time, absolutely.
That trailer was awesome because it showed me enough that it made me want to go mess around with all the viral stuff that I thought was online that ended up not having actually anything to do with Cloverfield. You remember that, Matt?
Yeah,
it had nothing to do with Cloverfield. It was some MMO or something that was coming out. And I was convinced. I mean, there was like days that I thought it was something to do with Cloverfield. And the whole, like, I saw in the trailer, like, the guy holding a Slusho cup. And so I was just like obsessed with that, like trying to find out about this movie.
Yeah. Oh man, absolutely. But also The Matrix, like when the first Matrix trailer came out, because what The Matrix is built on, until you see the movie, of course, everybody's seen it now,
right,
is, you know, what is The Matrix? You know, and they're showing all this crazy stuff. They're showing Carrie Ann Moss like floating in midair, the cameras rotating around her in her black leather outfit. They're showing Keanu Reeves like jumping from building to building and slow motion leaning back and doing all this crap, dodging bullets.
I think that brings up another point about trailers, and this, the one I was thinking of was Inception, and if you take, if you go back to before Inception, nobody had any idea what this movie was about. Not a clue. And even in the trailer itself, you could see 5 minutes of it, and you're still like, what the crap is this movie? What's going on? If you take it back to before The Matrix, before that movie came out, you saw the trailer, you had no clue what you were watching. Any idea. And for me, it made me want to go see it even more because I wanted to figure out what this was. I mean, of course, when I saw the movie, the first one, it was fantastic.
And my jaw was on the floor, especially when they showed like what the Matrix is. I was right. Like, oh my gosh, we could be in the Matrix right now.
Right.
You know, it was freaking awesome. But that is great use of holding back enough information, you know, not giving you too much.
I hate trailers that give everything away. I do.
Me too. I totally do too.
A trailer that I loved was Casino Royale. I thought that was such an awesome trailer, just the way that they just let you know, obviously, that it was a Bond movie, but it was different than anything that you had seen before from a Bond movie. It was really gritty and stuff like that. And I don't know. I loved that trailer. And then the other one that I've loved most recently is Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. That's one thing that you guys haven't mentioned yet that I love in a trailer is just the music behind it.
That's one of my topics
approach. One of the... just that song that they use might not be the best song in the world or whatever, but it just, and the way that trailer just flashes stuff up. And I'm more into that type of trailer than the one that gives you all a bunch of information. I mean, the reason I didn't like the Dark Knight Rises trailer is, I don't know. I mean, I wanted to see a little bit more Bane interaction with Batman, but just a little bit more. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I understand what the trailer's trying to do, but I just didn't get it. And that end part where the building's all around it and it shows the bat symbol just made me think of Inception. So I immediately...
Yeah, I didn't. I wasn't a big fan of the building thing either. Yeah, and I remember, I know people have shown that, talked about the poster.
Right.
And they're talking about like best movie poster ever. It's incredible. It's like, it's okay. It's not that great.
Yeah.
It's a freaking bat symbol with buildings around it.
But one that just came out today, the Spider-Man trailer. Oh, it's actually...
It looks good.
The third-person view of Spidey going through the buildings and stuff like that, I really dug that a lot.
It's actually first-person.
Well, that's what I meant, first-person. Yeah, I really dug that a lot. I mean, I thought...
Oh, yeah,
that
you see the reflection at the very end.
Yes. I thought that was a very good way to not show us a lot, but show us a lot at the same time. I mean, so...
I just want to bring up a couple other examples of movies of trailers that just blew me away and made me just like want to see the movie just to see what it's about. The Village really did that for me, you know, because that was the whole build up, you know, with like this, you know, we've lived here in this place for so many years.
Well, that was also when the words from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan meant something. You know.
Did it even say that back then?
Or it probably said
M. Night Shyamalan.
M. Night Shyamalan presents, or the director
from
of,
the
or whatever.
Mind of.
But also Unbreakable. Unbreakable. If you guys remember Unbreakable trailer, it had it just showed Bruce Willis sitting in the hospital room.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy walks up to him. He's like, "Sir, so what seat were you sitting in on
that
the train?"
Was,
and he says, "Yeah, I was sitting next to the window." And he's like, "Okay, and are you sure you're sitting there? Do you remember that?" And he's like, "Yeah." We're like, "What's wrong?" He's like, "Why are you looking at me so funny?" He's like, "Well, I'm looking at you funny for two reasons. Number one, you're the only survivor of the entire train crash.
Number two,
you have not a scratch on you. And then it shows Samuel L. Jackson, like, you know, are you ready to find out what your destiny is? It's just so cool because you had no idea what this movie is about in the first place. Follow up to The Sixth Sense. And then number two, it's like, is this superheroes? Is this, you know, what does this mean? I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah,
like, really, really well done.
Yeah.
But the next thing I wanted to bring up, and I got two examples here and then a couple bad ones, are music. The first one, the one that I always think of now is the Watchmen trailer from 2009 with the Smashing Pumpkins, The Beginning is the End is the Beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
I've looked online at like top 50 lists and top 100 lists of top trailers, and this one is always in the list of all of them. But it just, do you guys remember Batman and Robin? Remember how crappy a movie that was?
Yeah, I remember.
Okay, on the soundtrack, it actually had some good songs on it that were original from Smashing Pumpkins. Two that were the same song, same melody, But it was the very first song on the album and the very last song on the album. The very first one was called The End Is the Beginning Is the End. And it was like really fast, like techno sounding. The very end song was called The Beginning Is the End Is the Beginning, last track. And it was, I think it was one of them was the credit in credits music for the thing. But there, it's the reason for me to get the soundtrack. I actually really like the soundtrack mainly because of those two songs. But the last one is this really low key, like just end of the world song. And the use of this song years later, like 10 years later in this Watchmen trailer, I thought everybody had forgotten about it. And I always thought it would look awesome, you know, in a movie, in something. And then, you know, Zack Snyder or whoever put this trailer together pulls it out. And I think it was just an incredibly effective trailer. The other one for music is The Punisher, Warzone? Not The Punisher, Warzone, no, the Tom Jane one, one with the Mark Colley song, you know, with the, I can't remember what the, how the song
Who's
goes, because I've
Colley?
Seen it. Mark Colley is the guy from, the guy that was like the country singer, you know, that comes and stalks him.
Mark Colley,
you
know, did the music for The Punisher?
He did one song.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, do you not remember that?
Yeah, I do.
In the movie? Yeah. Where he sings, you know, he sits there and sings, and he's like, I wrote this for you. It's like, I'm going to sing it over your grave or whatever. Yeah. You know, but they play that at the very beginning, and then it shows like more of a real trailer after it. I just thought that was a brilliant beginning to the to that trailer. But anyway, a couple examples of crappy use of music. Well, one crappy use of music, Cowboys and Aliens trailer. I think it sucks. I hate it when people use a song that you know. Okay, I love Audioslave.
Right.
Okay, I've heard you know, Gasoline so many times. They butcher the song. They just take it and just rip it all apart and just add all the parts wherever they want. And it does not make the trailer better, number one.
Right.
And it's like it doesn't fit the movie to me.
Exactly.
It doesn't fit what I'm looking at.
From what I understand, it's more like straight Western than what they're trying to convey in the trailer.
I'm not excited about that movie.
I
mean,
think
the
it's
trailer
be good,
doesn't interest me. It's just,
they're making a mistake in the way that they're trying to show us that trailer. They're making us think it's like a straight up now action movie with Audioslave in the soundtrack. It's not even, I mean, it's a Western. It's really going to be a straight up Western from what I understand.
Well, the only thing to me that's keeping any interest in this movie is Favreau. Cause I've gotten to a point where, I mean, I like Daniel Craig. Okay. But
dude, I love him.
I don't think he's the greatest thing ever. I don't think he's that great. He looks really, he's getting too old looking, one thing. And I don't think he was, I think he was good at first when he was Bond, but I'm getting to a point where I'm like, he does not work as Bond for me. In the same way, but but also like
he's no Roger
you know, Harrison,
Moore, of course, but
no, of course not, or George Lazenby, absolutely, but you know, like also Harrison Ford. I mean, I don't know if
Careful.
I can get that. I don't know if I can get excited about seeing him in anything
Dude.
New. Yeah. He's so grumpy, and he's so. I don't know. I think he's lost it.
He's just a miserable person right now.
He's untouchable in my eyes. I'm sorry. I mean,
you're fiercely loyal for your people, Michael, and I respect that to a degree. You're fiercely loyal for Kevin Costner, who hasn't done anything worth a crap. And
we're going to be talking about that later.
Almost.
We're going to be talking about that.
I know. We're going to be talking about that later. We'll see.
He's Unchained. But,
oh yes, we will, sir.
But the last trailer I wanted to talk about, awesome trailer, but horrible movie. Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, never mind. Sorry.
Where the Wild Things Are.
Dude.
Did you guys ever see the movie?
I love that movie.
God, it is the most depressing movie ever. It is like the biggest like dysfunctional family of like navel-gazing, sad creatures I've ever seen. The animation in it is amazing. Like so many things about the movie are so well done, but then when you see what it's really about, it's like you leave the movie and you're kind of like, what the crap?
I don't know.
Like, why did I even watch this? But because I'm a huge fan of the book. You know, I mean, I loved the book when I was a kid. And you're watching that trailer, it was like so fun. You know, but in the movie, they're all like, oh, he doesn't like me. Like, everybody's like crying. It's like, what the heck? This is not where the Wild Things are. This is like bipolar depressed people. They need some like Zoloft or something.
I don't know, man. You might need to watch it again. I don't. How many times have you seen it?
Just once.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it in the theater, and then I also watched it on Blu-ray. I don't know what it is about the movie, but it does evoke some type of emotion in me that really, I don't know, I really, really think that it's a great movie, and I think it deserves a second viewing at least.
Do you think it's a movie that kids would enjoy?
I don't know about kids, but I think it's not really necessarily for kids. It's for adults to, I don't know,
be nostalgic.
Evoke a nostalgic thought of their childhood. And I don't know. It did a great job in that aspect. I don't know. The more I watch the movie, and I want to keep watching it because it just does something for me. The more I watch it, and I love this again. The soundtrack has a lot to do. I love anything Karen O does, and I know you.
Sandra O.
No.
Oh, sorry.
Karen O from.
Well, no.
Yes. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I thought, like I said, the music, the Arcade Fire songs, and I really could care less about the Arcade Fire, but the music fits. It fits it really well. The trailer. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much about it. And I like Spike Jonze.
Yeah.
But I just felt like the movie was just so, like, depressing. I couldn't deal. I don't know what it was, man. I don't really don't want to see
it. Characters look like rejects from the H.R. Puffin Stuff show. I mean, they really do. I've never seen the movie. I could care less about the movie.
I think you'd like it a lot, Dave. I really do.
Nothing about that movie interests me whatsoever.
They're, like I said, it is a technical achievement.
I mean, it's no robot
absolutely.
Jocks, but, I mean, we can.
No. Well, careful, Michael.
My bad. Yeah. I was complimenting
robot jocks. But, well, Stephanie, here's the deal. Stephanie went to see it with some of the girls in her small group. She did middle school girls.
I don't think it's for girls, though.
It's not for anybody under 18. And if you have the book, it's a children's book. Mm-hmm. It should be enjoyable by people that are for the age of that material. And it could be enjoyable by adults. But it was like an old art tale, like an old people's, like, not old people, but middle-aged people's, like, aging hippie, like, emotional, like, my life's over, let me remember how I was made fun of when I was young or something.
Right.
It did not work. It needs to be kid friendly because the book is kid friendly.
I know. I see what you're saying totally, but
I would never want to show that to my son or daughter.
No, and I don't think that the intention is for that necessarily. But it just depends on what, I mean, that particular kid, if you're thinking about the story, and I don't want to keep going on about this necessarily, but I mean,
I have no input whatsoever.
He came from a rough home. And so I don't know. I think there's merits to this movie. But anyways,
on next week's episode, we'll do a separate bonus content podcast on Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah. Okay. I had one last trailer.
The kid was a
real
good actor,
fast. Stephanie, I asked Stephanie what trailer she liked.
My Little Pony.
The only thing she could think of was Hitch. The Hitch trailer. That's the only thing she
could think of. I want to see that.
We looked it up and rewatched it, and it has one of those, like, in a world where when no one knows what a women are thinking, this is the guy that helps. It's ridiculous. I love those voiceover comedy trailers. They're so stupid. All right, that's
well,
the sword.
But I want to add on it real quick. As far as trailers go,
sure.
I'm guessing you guys have seen the Winnie the Pooh trailer, and it uses the.
I'm being dead serious.
I kind of wanted to see this movie anyway, but
it's a good trailer.
Using the Keen song.
Yeah,
and it nostalgia that? Is. I mean, it's. The trailer is almost perfect. I mean, like,
it is, yeah.
I'm afraid that the trailer will be better than the movie because I want to see this movie so much now just because of that trailer.
My 4-year-old niece,
you know,
loved it.
I mean, I will love it. I mean, I'm excited about seeing it. I think it's going to be great. I mean, just knowing where Pooh has gone in the last 10 years, what they've done with the characters and how they've kind of just basically screwed them over. And now they're bringing them back from the old
days. Depends.
Do
you have a septic tank or sewer system?
So, I don't know. Anyway.
I mean, for me, as an obese man, Pooh has always been a character that I've loved.
Ah, so. Yes. You're thinking Mr. Hankey, actually.
His love for honey.
Yeah.
I experience it multiple times a day. I'll tell you guys that much.
Sweet.
So
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm dedicated to Pooh.
All right. Well, I guess that's the board. And so we're going to move over to... to little thing we call buried treasure. And, you know, many times I dig up a buried treasure and we talk about a movie or something that, you know, maybe
sometimes it ends up to be
about.
Poo.
Exactly. Such is the case of this movie that I wanted to briefly discuss. I'll get Tommy to turn me up here because he always turns me down where I can't. There we go. So see, John Travolta plays George. He sees a bright light in the sky and suddenly develops telekinetic powers. Kira Sedgwick is the love interest, and Forrest Whitaker is the best friend, and Robert Duvall is in there somewhere. And all in all, the movie's called Phenomenon, and let me just tell you, it's not a great movie. It's really not a good movie at all.
Nothing but a phenomenon.
But the soundtrack is fantastic. It's absolutely awesome. It's kind of a softer soundtrack, and you're going to hear some Jewel and some Brian Ferry, some Marvin Gaye, some Aaron Neville. You might
as long as we don't hear all of it.
You might recognize this song here by, of course, Eric Clapton with Background's Babyface. This is where the song came from. Big Babyface hit 1996. Edmund. And so this is off the soundtrack as well. But another little song, too, that I wanted to bring up by the Iguanas that I think you guys are going to enjoy. It's called Para Donde Vas, and I don't know any Spanish, even though I'm Mexican.
That was impressive.
But,
you actually sound Mexican there.
Very good.
Good job.
Anyway, I love this soundtrack.
Embracing your heritage.
It's just, it's great. It's I used to play this actually endlessly on my own CD player in college. When I actually didn't really have a CD player in my car, my crappy car, I had like a Walkman, and I had that tape player I would plug in there and everything. And
I've been there, buddy.
You know, I'd plug into the Walkman, the tape player, whatever. So I'd ride down the road with the windows down, listen to the Iguanas and Para Donde Vas, you know. And, of course, Peter Gabriel, the ending song, I Have the Touch, kind of the scene at the end of the movie where he goes out to find the kid.
Oh, I love
whatever,
some Peter Gabriel.
You know. But this soundtrack is so, so good.
Yeah, Peter Gabriel, baby.
I mean, it's great, and I recommend this to. And I don't know anybody else that owns the soundtrack besides me.
I don't.
It's not as good as The Touch by Stan Bush, but
well, really, no. What is, you know?
There is nothing.
But anyway, that's a quick little buried treasure for you. So I'm going to suggest you go to thedeucecast.com.
Yes.
You find this link for the Phenomenon soundtrack, and you purchase it. It's going to be like $5 on Amazon. It can't be much. Because it's an old soundtrack. It's got the cover's got John Travolta's big ugly face on it, and so you'll know it. Anyway, give them $10. Give us the nickel or so, you know, to help us out and everything. But but that's the buried treasure for this week. The Phenomenon motion picture soundtrack. Skip the movie, go straight to the music.
I feel good about it, Dave.
You should. You should. It's a great, great.
Peter
great
Gabriel's
soundtrack.
Okay in my book.
Exactly. And I know you love Jewel too. So I know Sean loves Jewel. So you should be able to get that soundtrack.
I love Jewel's
well.
Teeth.
Yeah. Renee Zellweger is the same person, really.
Right.
So, yeah. This week's Big Three.
Yeah.
We're going to turn it to television, and we're going to talk about our favorite television characters of all time. And these are characters that we just can't get enough of. I mean, there's really no need to explain what this is. We just said favorite television characters of all time, and we just kind of went with it. I'm going to let you start it this time.
Wow.
And, however you want to do it. Honorable mentions, of course. I think for all of us, this is a little bit difficult, but go ahead.
Oh man, this was really, really difficult. But anyway, I've got some honorable mentions, and then it was really hard for me to come up with a top three. But when I get to the top three, I'll explain kind of how I derive these honorable mentions. Okay, when I look at a character, I look at the uniqueness and memorability of that character, like how revolutionary maybe they were in your life, you know, when you saw them at first, or how freaking hilarious they are.
That's going to be my number one. It's how revolutionary.
Okay.
Yeah.
Honorable mentions. And you guys might have these, and don't say it if you do, right. Like just let you guys explain it when you get to them. James T. Kirk, I think, is of course awesome. He's not in my top three, but he is absolutely one of my all time favorite characters. Of course, Star Trek. Omar Little from The Wire. He is a awesome character. Very, very, very unique. Walter Bishop from Fringe is just an incredible character. Kind of like he's hilarious. He's got this creepy past. Awesome. Job or Gob Bluth from Arrested Development. Awesome. Arrested Development is full of great characters,
right.
But Job is the most memorable of those to me. Star Trek The Next Generation, Data. I will never forget Data. I'll never forget like the concept of having an android, you know, character as a main actor. He had such interesting storylines in the show. And then, of course, any great character list would be remiss, or we would be remiss to mention Dwight Schrute from The Office, U.S. version. Is one of my favorite all-time comedic characters. But my number three, one of my all-time favorite TV shows, and this is very central to 5 years of my marriage to Steph. We had groups of people come over every week to watch this show, Lost. Mm. And it's really, really, really hard for me to choose a character That is a great character from Lost without it being the main character. Even though I love John Locke, I love Hurley, I love Benjamin Linus, I love Sawyer. They're all great characters. Jack Shepard is my number three. And Jack Shepard is my number three because I think he has the most incredible and extensive character arc from the very beginning to the very end of the show. We rewatched the finale yesterday. And just to see from the very beginning, you know, he's the man of science versus Locke's the man of faith. To at the very end, you know, he's made this huge, huge journey, and he is the main focus of the whole show. And to me, Jack Shepard is like Lost to me. So Jack Shepard is my number three.
Right on.
Very nice.
Good one, man.
Very nice. Well, my honorable mentions, and I kind of did what you did. I mean, I kind of went through and thought about the TV shows that I really grew up watching and just loving. I picked Dr. Huxtable from The Cosby Show.
Good one.
Heathcliff?
Yep. Cliff Huxtable. Judge Harry Stone from Night Court. I almost went with Dan Fielding, but Judge Harry Stone from Night Court. Tim Taylor from Home Improvement, which made me laugh every single week. You know, I had a hard time with picking just one of the cast of Friends, but I did pick Chandler Bing because he was my favorite.
I hate that show.
I know you do. And I was like you with Lost. I really had because Lost immediately came to my mind, but it's like, how can I pick one character? Because
it's so hard.
You know, it really is. And I even wrote down Saeed and Hurley, but I had to throw them as honorable mentions because I couldn't come up with a definitive character that I'm like, this is my favorite character of the show, because every week it changed depending on what was going on. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell,
that's
a great character. But my number three, I think, because I love how cool this guy is, and because he has left the show now, it is really taking a dive as far as the show goes. Gil Grissom from CSI.
Oh,
One episode I really point back to is there was an episode where there was a death in like one of the midget conventions in Los Angeles, or I'm sorry, Las Vegas. And
Dave, that's small person, please.
Yes, I'm sorry. And one of the other characters they were making jokes about it. I mean, they were making jokes about little people and what was going on and blah blah blah. And Gil Grissom walked in and essentially shut them down. And he let them know that, you know what, they're little people, but they deserve respect. They deserve respect too. And the entire character of the show, you never hear him defame anybody. You never hear him talk slanderous about anybody at all. I mean, he's such an upstanding character, such a great guy. And really the show...
Is it because he's upstanding or because he's incredibly boring?
Well, that too. But no, I think he's a great guy. I think Gil Grissom is a fantastic character. And so that's my number three, Gil Grissom from Crime Scene Investigation.
All right, I had a lot of honorable mentions as well, and I sort of came to them the same way you guys, like shows I used to love as a kid, shows more recent that I sort of grew up with, but Kramer is one of my favorites, Buffy, the Sarah Michelle Gellar's Buffy, Odo from Deep Space Nine. I loved me some Odo. I don't know what it was, but I loved it. I also, too, loved Benjamin Linus from Lost. Murdoch from the A-Team, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dude, one of my favorite. Stringfellow Hawk from Airwolf. He was one of my, dude, he was one of my favorites as well. And then Michael Knight. I loved. I had like so many Knight Rider toys. It was ridiculous. Michael Knight.
That's
was
awesome.
My favorite. And then Dwight Schrute as well. I received a tweet from Rhett, and I apologize, Matt, if this is going to steal one of yours, but Rhett says his favorite of all time is Jack Bauer, so I wanted to mention that.
No, he's not.
Okay. But, and then something that you guys know, because I've talked about it a ton, it shows that I love are those teen soap opera shows, and so my number three of all time is Pacey. From Dawson's Creek.
Dude,
I loved me some Pacey, and I still love that. I still love him as an actor, but his character Pacey.
Joshua Jackson.
There you go.
He's still carrying strong,
dude,
though.
I think he's a
James
great actor.
James Vanderbeek, my boy.
But Pacey's definitely my number three of all time. So, Matt, what's your number two, buddy?
Well, I had to also mention, when I was thinking of this, you know, like you guys are talking about, I had to think, like, okay, there's so many freaking awesome... When I was a kid, you know, I had, like, Optimus Prime, Duke, Snake Eyes, you know, like, He-Man, like, so many characters that I, you know, used to love.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't, you know, they're really... When you look at them now, they're not as good characters. Even though Optimus Prime's voice is still... the most awesome voice ever. But my number two is again, I have to look at the entire kind of series, and great characters make me feel something, you know, when I see it. And Dave, I understand like your feeling about Grissom, you know what I mean? Right. Like about kind of what he represents in that role. I'm not as familiar with CSI because I didn't connect to the show, right. But I exactly understand. My number two has got to be Coach Eric Taylor from Friday Night Lights. I think that he just is an incredible character. I mean, he embodies what you hope any coach you have is like, and any mentor in life that you have is like. He has an awesome like chemistry with the person that plays his wife, Tammy Taylor. Of course, I'm talking about Kyle Chandler,
right,
as the actor, right, playing Eric Taylor. He just embodies, like, there's something authentic about the way that that show carries on, and from the very beginning, from the pilot to the very last episode, which just aired on NBC like last week, and now it's available on Hulu Plus. The last episode is beautiful. It's awesome. That show's constantly made me feel something. He's had all these great supporting characters: Jason Street, of course, Tammy Taylor, Buddy Garrity, Tim Riggins, that have like helped make him a great character. But I think he is so deserving as an actor of getting the Emmy nomination he just got, as well as just such a well-written character that made the show one of the best shows. Like, I really want to go back. We finished watching it. I really want to go back like right now and start watching it again. It's so good. And like watch all of it. I would love to, you know, right now. I just loved it that much. So, anyway, that was my number two, is Coach Eric Taylor.
Good call.
One. Good one, man.
My number two, I went in a completely opposite direction, and I thought of characters that, I mean, every time they're on, they make me laugh. I mean, no matter what mood I'm in, what time of the day and everything, they make me laugh. And I went all the way back to
Barney Fife,
early 90s. No, I hate Andy Griffith. You know this. My number two character, and this is a duo, my favorite characters of all time, Beavis and Butthead. and I'm being serious when I say that. I don't mean that just say, I'm going to bring this up just to make fun. I love those characters. I don't get into South Park. I don't watch that much at South Park or whatever. I don't watch a lot of the cartoons that are out now. But I watched the movie not too long ago, Beavis and Butthead Do America, and I was on my couch almost crying at jokes I had seen 1,000 times.
Yeah, it's good.
I still laughed and laughed and laughed. And every time that show is on, I laugh because it's so stupid, but it's so funny. I love Beavis and Butthead, and I love the fact that they're coming back. I think they're coming back, and I think it's great. So, yeah, and I actually was wondering how long cool. It would take to get the huh's going on from you guys. And it took about 3 seconds. Good job. Anyway, Beavis and Butthead, that's my number two favorite characters of all time.
Oh, man. Dude, I
time.
Totally I agree yeah. Dave. I used to watch my dad and I, when Beavis and Butthead first came on, my dad and I used to watch Beavis and Butthead whenever it came on. And we laughed so hard. Like, I remember the episode, one of the ones that my dad and I laughed so hard at. We were watching the one where they are supposed to, in gym class, they're supposed to go get jock straps. and they go to the store and they can't find any small.
They have to get an eye patch.
Oh wow, that's classic, dude.
It's well, so it's funny. Like in the movie where Beavis ends up in the cockpit, and the pilot's like, "Get out of the cockpit! You can't be here." And Beavis goes, "Huh? You said," and the plane takes a dive, and he goes rolling down the plane. it's so ridiculously dumb. It's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Also, they are one of the only TV shows where I've ever seen people do the thing where, you know, you put your hands together right. and spread, you know, when you're like a little kid, you think it's so funny because it's like a butthole or whatever, you know, you split your fingers apart and stick them together, yeah. you know, and you like look in it. I was like, this is like the most puerile humor ever, but it's so
funny. And to me,
funny.
It's so much better than a lot of the stuff that's out there right now because it's such stupid humor. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. It's
almost like innocently stupid.
It is. Yeah. It really is. Because I remember, I mean, like, I know parents that would let their kids watch it back when it first came on. And it's relatively tame based on according to what is out
it
there
is.
Now. And so I will let
tame.
My son watch Beavis and Butthead around 12 or 13, you know, when he gets old enough to really appreciate fart jokes and, you know, and find that the crap is funny and the boobies are cool. You know, somewhere around 12 or 13. So we'll get there. But
boobs.
All right. Mikey, you're number one. I'm sorry, you're number two.
Yeah,
number two.
My number two is Denny Crane from The Practice. I love, first of all, I love William Shatner, so anything that he's in, I try and keep track of. But I really loved his portrayal of Denny Crane. I thought that was one of the most endearing right-wing gun-toting characters that could ever be. And if you didn't watch the show, you know, obviously you couldn't see the majesty that was Denny Crane. And he was a great companion to James Spader's character. I can't really remember his name.
Are you talking about Boston Legal?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Boston Legal at the practice. That's where... Anyways, but yeah, Boston Legal, Denny Crane was my favorite, second favorite.
Very nice.
Cool.
Matt, your number one favorite TV character of all time.
Okay, so number one for me is, when I was doing this list, there was absolutely no question of it. Number one was, this was always going to be it, and for the last 23 years would always be it. I'm talking about Homer Simpson. I've always been a mega Simpsons fan. I mean, if you guys have ever been over here, I know each of you guys have have seen my
Simpsons room.
Shrine yeah. to Simpsons. I've got like hundreds of Simpsons figures. I've got posters. I've got two Simpsons lamps I'm looking at. I've got a Simpsons Christmas tree. I'm looking at a Homer Chia Pet. I've got all the DVDs. I'm looking at like a everything. I mean, just like basically imagine it in I've got the Simpsons version of it. I'm looking at the Simpsons Game of Life. You know, like I just think Homer represents like just the ultimate like multifaceted but always consistent ridiculous character. Like he is doing the stupidest stuff. He never changes week to week. Like whatever happens in a certain episode, he never remembers any of it. You know what I mean? He never learns from his mistake. Like any point to an episode is totally lost on him. He's totally childlike in every way, but he still, you know, finds a way sometime, you know, Dan Castellaneta who voices and finds a way to interject something that just catches you totally off guard in his performance. You know, as you guys know, the Simpsons has got like five people that do all the voices and they've got hundreds of characters. But of course, you know, the great supporting cast like Moe, Krusty the Clown, Chief Wiggum, Monty Burns. I mean, I can name like 5 billion because I love them all. But Homer has always been one that, you know, he's incredibly quotable. Like everybody knows Doe, you know, like, or Doe. It's just like everybody you meet, you can refer, there's some reference to Homer, you know, that you can like run into with him. And, if you don't like the Simpsons very much or never got into it, you know, maybe that wouldn't be the case. But for me, it's kind of like Homer is always with me. You know, like I always connect everything to something that Homer's done in my
life. Would you,
'cause there's so much.
Would you agree? And I've heard this said, and I don't watch enough Simpsons to be able to speak to this with any kind of confidence, but would you agree that originally the show was about Bart, but over the years it developed into a show about Homer with Bart being a supporting player?
No, I don't agree with that. I do agree that Bart was what people paid attention to at first because Bart said, like, damn.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, Bart said, like, eat my shorts.
Tag. Dang it, Matt.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. But the show was always about the whole family. And then I think Homer quickly became... because I think it totally is because of Dan Castellaneta's performance. Because it really morphed from almost like being like a W.C. Fields, you know, like character into being what it is within a couple years. And it just stayed so stinking funny. And if you ever watch any special features, like if you see how they came up with a lot of the things that he says, it's Dan Castellaneta just kind of like riffing, you know, like by himself. In this thing, and he has a script, and he starts kind of just like playing, and comes up with these like just absolutely rolling the floor, hilarious, you know, little things that he just kind of comes up with because it's like he channels this stupidest part of his brain that's Homer.
I think like you said though, I mean, since it's a show about this family, I think the cool thing about the show is that you can relate to whatever character, you know, like probably chicks relate to Lisa. You know, younger guys might relate to Bart. You and me and Dave might relate more to Homer. So I think the cool thing is that whatever character you want to be is what the show is about to you.
No, that's very true. Yeah. And I mean, it's one of the only shows that's still on that. But I mean, like, of course, Family Guy is a family, but it's also, a little different, right, and incredibly ripping off of The Simpsons in a lot of ways. And they admit it.
Right.
But you know, The Simpsons is one of the only shows where the family goes to church. You know, the family is like totally together and spends time together and eats together, you know, and like does things together. I mean, it's kind of the exception to the rule in a lot of ways for shows around that. And that's been the case for years. You know, I mean, the funniest sitcoms have been about like people that are, you know, like totally single and never want to get married, you know, for like a long time. And The Simpsons has always been there because it's always funny. Anyway, that's my number one.
Choice.
That's my number one. I almost knocked my microphone over.
With my number one, I gotta say that this is not available on DVD at all, and so I'm not able to go back and rewatch these on DVD. I know that you own every Homer Simpson or every Simpsons episode ever created, and I know Michael has every Dawson's Creek and 90210 and every teen show
that's
episode
right.
all on LaserDisc and whatever.
The OC.
And so this one is not available, so it's a little disconcerting that I have to watch Ion or you know ABC Family. Well, not even ABC Family. I have to watch Ion to watch this show if it ever comes on. And that, of course, is The Wonder Years. And I grew up with this show because Kevin Arnold. It is not on DVD because of the musical rights. Because the musical is such a part of that show.
Interesting.
It is so expensive for musical rights of that show. Huh. So it's not on DVD right now. And Kevin Arnold and I feel like we were kinsmen growing up. I was a ninth grader when he was an eighth grader. He got his first kiss before I did, but I got my license before he did. I mean, I would watch that show every week, and my friends even knew that if you called me Wednesday at 7 o'clock, I would hang up on you. I would not answer the phone because I was watching The Wonder Years. And I loved that show. I had a huge crush on Winnie, even though now, looking back, she really wasn't that cute. But just because she was, I think it's because she wasn't gorgeous. She was like this attainable kind of cute girl, that, you know.
Yeah.
and that's what made her so great. Just Kevin Arnold is probably my favorite character of all time.
That's a good one, dude.
Just who he is and the character he was. And I loved that show. If we ever do a big three on favorite TV shows of all time, that'll have to be mentioned, you know, at some point. So,
yeah.
Do you think Earls would be Doogie Howser,
or that, or St. Elsewhere, one or the other? So,
exactly.
All right,
Howie Mandel,
Michael, your number one favorite character of all time.
Yeah, my favorite character of all time, and this was from a show that I, you know, started watching. I guess it started in '93, I want to say, and. You know, I've always been a huge, you know, sci-fi fan, but I wasn't ever much of like a scary movie type fan, or Dave knows I hate horror movies, but there was a show that came out in '93, The X-Files, that was very accessible, in that manner. And I dug all the scary episodes. I really dug the mythology episodes, but, Fox, Spooky Mulder is my favorite character of all time. And, you know, the man, David Duchovny, is probably not the best guy on the face of the earth, but I loved his character. I mean, he was really, really great. Unfortunately, the most recent movie that came out was a dud, but it was bad. But the show and that...
Wasn't it about, like, blind gay priests?
Something random like that.
Vampires or zombies or something?
Yeah, something really random like that. It was basically... Priest. It could have just been an extra long episode. It didn't even have to be made into a movie. But, it always... that show always scared me, but in a good way. So I loved... I don't know. I loved that show, and I love that character. Probably my favorite of all time.
No, I watched my share, man. I loved the X-Files, and I thought that when they brought in
Robert
what's
Patrick.
His face, from Terminator, I thought he, and from also of course the Marine,
of course the Marine,
most famous from the Marine. But I thought those that were was, strong. I mean, I thought he was a great Doggett was a good character. I thought to bring in.
And I think that show, as far as I can remember, and I could be totally wrong on this, but that was one of the shows that. The first shows I can remember that had a mythology built into it that and you wanted to keep watching it because you wanted to know what would happen next within the continuity of the show. It wasn't just here's an episode, like, you know, all the older shows.
The Fall Guy was like that with Lee Majors.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't any...
Very, very similar.
And Scarecrow Mrs. King.
Well,
yes.
I mean, I know Simon and Simon had a continuity to it, but, I mean...
Different canon.
Hardcastle and McCormick also.
Yeah, Heart to Heart. I mean, those all had great mythology. No, I'm just...
Yeah.
But, I don't know. This was one of... which, you know, J.J. Abrams... J.J. Abrams is the king of you know, continuity in his shows now, but I really think Chris Carter might have had one of the first, you know, type of shows where you wanted to keep track of what was going on.
Well, I agree, but it was only only like four episodes a season.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the rest of the episodes, a huge number. That's my only qualm with the X-Files at all, is that a huge number of episodes were totally unrelated to the mythology.
Yeah, no.
And you never knew. You really, really, really wanted to see, like, okay, what's next with the black oil that goes in people's noses and apparently controls their brain or whatever.
Or is Krychek really dead? Or
exactly. Or why is he missing an arm or whatever? And I eventually became fatigued watching the show and be like, okay, I'm ready to see what's next. Oh, this is about, like, vampire bats.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this is about, like, a funny spoof with Michael McKean, you know, playing as Fox Mulder in a movie.
Yeah.
Or, like, who cares?
I think Sean can look this up, but I think that the X-Files lasted 9 or 10 seasons, and I think it was probably just too many seasons.
It was good. It was a good show.
But I think that they could have condensed it. I think what, you know, obviously J.J. Abrams does perfect on the majority of his shows is, you know, has 5-6 seasons max. The mythology is throughout. There's not, you know, skipped. Well, Fringe has some skipped episodes where it doesn't have mythology, but now it's more mythology than anything, because
I think they realized that was a strength.
I know that they know this is probably going to be the last season, so I mean they're trying to finish it up in 5 seasons. I think 5 seasons is a good, you know, number to finish on and have a good tight
finish
continuity.
finish strong
it exactly. is even though, like, for great shows like all the ones we've mentioned, I mean, like, for me, Lost and Friday Night Lights, to see them end was, like,
devastating,
painful. Yeah. I mean, it was. It's like a chapter of
my life.
But
I would rather see them
over.
End like that than to carry on three or four more seasons, and you're like, really, what is happening?
And get crappy.
Show? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really, really horrible. Have everybody get replaced, you know, with, like, different actors.
I do have to give a shout out on the Twitter feed there, where one of our listeners, Amy, mentioned V, and another good character, Donovan from V, of course. You know,
are you talking about the classic?
The classic V, yeah. We used to play V in the schoolyard, and everybody wanted to be Donovan. So
Mark Singer,
have you guys rewatched any of those old episodes?
They're good. I was terrified of that when
I was
a kid.
Dude, they're so crappy.
I mean, they're crappy, but they're good crappy. Dude, I mean, they're so, you know.
I think that the new one is pretty good.
Yeah.
Honestly.
What did it last?
A lot of people are disappointed, but I think it's fine.
Was it 2 or 3 seasons? I don't even remember the new one.
I think they really fought hard to keep it similar.
Mark Singer,
you know,
friend of the Deuce Cast, Mark Singer.
Beastmaster Mark Singer.
Absolutely.
Oh,
so Michael brought this up before the show, and of course that was our big three. Michael brought this up before the show, and so a few things he wanted to bring up from past shows.
Yeah, just
so
to, you know,
some callbacks, we like to call them.
Just to start off the roundtable strong, I thought it would be important to mention a couple different things. Back in episode 13, Voyage of the Podcast Treader, we were talking about some of the cartoons that we would love to see be made into a movie and we would hate to see made into a movie. One of them that we mentioned was Captain Planet. We hated the fact that that was a cartoon and hoped it would never be a movie. And ironically enough, the Cartoon Network is going to produce a feature film to try and compete with Nickelodeon films. This is going to be a feature film based on Captain Planet. For better or worse, we're going to get it. So they're
Captain Planet voiced by Al Gore.
There's a little callback there. And then also on episode 15, just the last episode there, we were talking about some of our favorite sports movies and Robot Jocks, which is debatably a sports movie or not, came up, and I had mentioned a movie that I loved as a companion to Robot Jocks that came out like the same time. It was a direct-to-video, and that would be Crash and Burn. So if you are lucky enough to be able to find, I'm sure there are means to find the movie, but in a legal manner, it might be difficult to find the movie. So if you want to try and look for it, though, it's called Crash and Burn. It's another Mech Warrior epic movie. So,
I'm sure epic is the right word for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is not to be mixed up with the 2008 TV movie Crash and Burn starring Michael Madsen.
Right. I mean, although I'm sure that's the title is probably fitting on that.
And one, also but, not to be mixed up with the Jennifer Garner movie Failure to or Catch and Release. Yes.
Right, right, yeah. right. But another thing that I always like to do in the round table is mention a little bit of Star Wars news, just because, as always, I'm obsessed with it. So Joe Johnston, who has a past with Star Wars, he was one of the original concept artists for Episode 4 back in the day, and he recently directed Captain America, and he's been making the rounds talking about Captain America because it, you know, comes out next week. And he's mentioned in several interviews but that he's been trying to talk George Lucas into letting him direct a live-action Boba Fett movie. So
interesting.
Total rumor, of course, probably will never happen.
I think that's a terrible idea.
I don't know, dude. I think it would be awesome just to see 2 hours of Boba Fett. I'm a big fan. So
I think it could be awesome, but it could be crappy. Who knows?
It depends on what the trailer looks like.
Exactly, exactly. So that's your little bit of a Star Wars.
As long as it's as good as The Rocketeer or Hidalgo, then Hidalgo. I'll be fine.
You mean Sandbiscuit?
Or what was the? He also directed
Honey, I Shrunk the
Mighty
Kids.
Ape.
A Mighty Ape?
The Mighty
Joe Young?
Mighty Joe Young, that's right, that's right. A Mighty Ape.
he's not listed as directing Mighty Joe Young.
Oh, I thought he did.
Yeah, he did Jumanji.
Okay, maybe
he did October Sky, Jurassic Park 3, The Wolfman.
He's directed some good movies, but some duds also. I mean...
Yeah, The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
One of my favorites.
One of the episodes, yeah. Princeton.
He's got that Lucasfilm back. He's part of the Lucasfilm... machine.
Canon. Yeah.
So
also The Pagemaster, starring
Macaulay Culkin.
Christopher Lloyd and Macaulay Culkin, directed certain
movie.
Action scenes.
That is awesome.
From that, yeah, so, it's on his
eyes. So of course, this week, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 came out, and we've all been talked about it, kind of, you know, leading up to it and everything. We're gonna stick around after the show and kind of do a little separate bit here and talk about more spoilers for Harry Potter. So if you're Harry Potter fans, you can tune in and listen to that part, and we will really dive into Harry Potter itself. And Michael, of course, has seen the movies. He hasn't read the books, and
right.
so he's going to add in what he knows about the movies.
Yeah.
I've read the books multiple times. I think Matt's pretty familiar on the subject as well.
Dude, I loved all the movies. I loved them.
So we're going to talk about that more in depth. But right now, we wanted to bring up real quick, just kind of talk about, did we like the movie? For those of you who don't want the movie spoiled for you, you don't want to listen to the spoiler content later on, you can listen to us right now and just talk about the movie briefly without spoilers. We're not going to spoil it for you now, but I will say that it is now the best movie I have seen this year. I keep saying
that.
I keep changing it, but it was so good. And there are parts of this, and this is the first time I've said this about any of the movies, there are parts of this movie that were better than the book. And
wow.
That is a strong statement for me being a Potter fan.
Yeah.
There are parts that were added to this movie that I was like, that is awesome. I wish that was in the book. And I've never said that about any of them. I loved this film.
Dude.
Every bit of it.
And I, you know, as someone who hasn't, like Dave mentioned, I haven't read the books. And I wouldn't even necessarily call myself a Potter fanatic by any means. But as somebody...
Michael!
As somebody sort of... outside of the Potter wheel or whatever, I absolutely loved this movie. In fact, I loved, you know, part one and two, thinking of it as one.
Right.
Dude, so well done.
Yeah, I have to connect
dude,
them
this
to
guy,
me.
David Yates, he's an up-and-comer for me, man. The director, this guy's phenomenal, dude. I mean, these two movies... And I, you know what?
Up and comer, he's been around since 88.
Doing TV, though.
No, he did the Fabulous Baker Boys. He did that movie.
Really?
No, I'll take that back. Never mind. That was Steve Kloves, the screenwriter of all the movies.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Anyways.
Matt, edit that out.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
I'm not going to edit
that. I don't know, dude. The tone, the tone of the movie, I mean, everything to me, and I know we're going to later on talk about stuff we might not have liked in being specific, but... I don't know. Everything to me was so perfect in this. I mean, and you know what, Dave? Thor so far had been my favorite movie.
Right.
This took it over by
far. This is just.
I mean, it's phenomenal to me. And again, I'm not like a huge fan of Potter, but dude, this is so well done. I cannot.
This is to me by far and away the best of all of the movies.
I want to see it.
Blows them out.
I probably won't get a chance to see it again, but I really do want to see it in 3D. I saw it in 2D the first time, and I have been told that 3D is the way to actually see this, and so I really do want to see it in. Oh, jeez, we almost lost power there.
Yeah.
Anyways, Matt, what do you got?
Oh well, I totally agree with you. I think it was awesome. Harry Potter has been. a thing that for Stephanie and I both, you know, we've read every book. We have, for the last two or three books, I guess maybe it was just the sixth and seventh, because it got to be several years between the last couple books. But I know when book six came out, you know, we were like, you know, got it the same day, started reading it the same day.
I think that was
05
when it came out,
Well, if it was 05, then it was the same, because we got married in 05. But then when the seventh book came out, we read it in one day. Both of us, like, just sat there. We got two copies. We just sat there and read all day Saturday, because it came out like at midnight, Friday night.
I was there
getting
at the midnight show, or getting the midnight book.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, I went to Books A Million and got it. It was just, you know, it's always been such an event for us that I almost have trouble considering it with the other movies of the year.
Right.
You know, just because it's so much more. I mean, it's the close of a huge chapter of my life.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? Really, because it's crazy, kind of, if you're not a Harry Potter fan, to hear that. But it's such a deep mythology. It's so involved. I mean, you can just get so wrapped up in all of the details, all of the richness, that I can't say necessarily that it's my favorite movie of the year, because I think Super 8 still is my number one movie of the year. But I think it, combined with the first, are by far the best book adaptation I've ever seen. And I think also the best Harry Potter movie by far. I mean, it was an emotional ride for me. I mean, this last movie was an incredibly emotional ride for me, just because it's like, this is over. Right. You know, we're done with these movies now. And I've seen these since these kids were little, you know, and now this is like, you know, coming to a conclusion, and this, you know, just as big as possible, as well imagined as possible. The one disappointment I had, and I'm not going to mention it, I'm going to save it for the spoilers in specifics, but I was a little bit disappointed in both the book and the movie, and some of the details of the climax.
Right.
I think
I'll talk about that too, because that's one of my problems with the book too, is the ending.
But other than that, I do think it was incredibly faithful, and I think it makes up for. It does as good as possible in making up for what was left out of the previous movies. But anyway, that's it. I think it's top-notch in special effects. I mean, there's almost nothing else that's better. I think between it and Transformers, this summer has been like absolutely jaw-dropping, you know, when it comes to special effects in totally different ways.
Well, those two and Zookeeper, so yes.
And of course Zookeeper, and then of course,
which I'm going to
see,
by the way,
you know, but whatever other crappy movie had come out.
Another
Priest.
Another book adaptation that's been trying to get itself off the ground for years is Dark Tower. Matt, you've got some Dark Tower stuff?
Yeah, supposedly NBC Universal have finally, as I expected would happen, because I just could not imagine them pouring out the millions and millions and millions it would take to do three seasons and two or three movies. They've pulled the plug. Yeah. And have you guys ever tried to read the Dark Tower series?
I've read the older ones. I know within the past 5 or 6 years he's come out with three more. I've read all the older ones. I didn't read the newer ones.
The series was actually complete, but apparently the eighth book is coming out in April.
Really?
Yeah, next year.
Are they?
Wow.
Okay, Michael, did you think they were that great and would make that great a TV series of movies?
No. I didn't think it'd be a good. Well. You know, now that I think about it, it might be a better TV series than movie, though. I think it's such a huge universe, sort of like, you know, Harry Potter, but obviously there's not as many fans of Dark Tower. But I don't know. I think it might have made a better TV show than a movie, but it would have had to have been like on HBO or Showtime or something. It couldn't have been on a network.
Well, here's what Stephen King said about it. He said, in quote, "As a rule, they've been about smaller and less risky picks," talking about Universal, "and maybe they would feel it'd be better to stick with those Fast and Furious racing boys."
Wow. So he's not happy.
I bear them no ill will and trust Ron Howard to get Roland and his friends before the camera somewhere else, because he's very committed to this project.
I don't know. I just don't see anybody who's going to bite on it. It would take way too much money to make it right.
We are, of course, talking about the Dark Tower series.
Yeah,
Stephen
the Dark
King.
Tower
yes.
series, yeah.
Well, hey, I do have some connected news with this. Yeah. Speaking of Stephen King and the things that he does love. Yeah. As you guys know, well, you guys might not know, last season he was a guest star or a cameo in Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, because
he loves Sons of Anarchy. His only stipulation was that he get to ride on his red, like old style Harley.
Right.
It's like this crazy, weird looking bike with huge like side things. But he turned out to be this like freaky, like taxidermist guy that gets rid of bodies.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but as far as a guest star this season, The Hoff is going to star as a former porn star who now is a producer, in the world universe of Sons of Anarchy.
Don't hassle The Hoff.
California. I think that is a pretty... like inspired selection,
well,
honestly,
I mean,
for that.
I don't know if you can recall, Burt Reynolds played a similar slimy type character in his, he was trying to make a comeback in with Striptease, that Demi Moore movie that nobody
saw.
But that his role was talked about quite a bit just because he was trying to get himself back into the game, basically.
He was pretty acclaimed for it. I do remember that.
There was a lot of Vaseline involved in one.
Vaseline!
In one scene of that. But that's a good start to the casting news. I mean, and that's going to be an awesome role for The Hoff, I think. I think, you know, hey, I loved Michael Knight. So, I mean, if he can pull this off and come to the set sober... And you know he might be able to pull it off.
Lay off on the cheeseburger.
Yes, he's going to keep reinventing himself. He's like Madonna.
But I know Matt that you had said you had been potentially disappointed in Daniel Craig's portrayal of Bond recently, the more recent portrayal. But there's been a lot of casting because it is going to come out next year. So there's been a lot of casting going on. Reese Ifans has been cast, and he's actually going to be the main villain in Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man that's coming out. You may recall him. I know you Notting Hill fans. That's the first time I saw him. Was Hugh Grant's friend in Notting Hill.
Yes.
But he's going to...
He's also Xenophilius Lovegood in Harry
Potter.
Oh,
yeah, you're right.
In the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Yeah, you're right about that. But he is an as unnamed role yet in the new James Bond. Most people are thinking it's probably going to be Q, just because there hasn't been, you know, a Q yet in the previous two. And then Naomi Harris is going to be Miss Moneypenny. She is an African-American actress, so this is... a different take, obviously, and it came out that it is going to be a much more grittier type of Moneypenny that's action oriented than the other.
Wow, what a surprise!
Exactly. I mean, no surprise there.
Grittier.
If you don't know,
it's unexpected.
If you don't know Naomi Harris, she plays the Jamaican chick in, I guess, like the last three Pirates movies. I think
the last two. She plays Callisto, right?
Yeah. And then more Django Unchained casting. I'm obsessed with Tarantino, so I follow all his stuff. Kevin Costner has been cast against type as Ace Woody, the bloodthirsty slave trainer who trains slaves to be ruthless killers. So pretty typical Tarantino-sounding stuff. Costner, and also he's going to be in a huge superhero movie next year as well, playing Pa Kent in the Superman movie.
Yeah.
So
it's that's
pretty
cool.
I mean,
both are good. Costner could be very potentially great.
I'm a huge Costner fan.
Totally.
I stick with him tried and true, like Matt, to a fault probably, but I haven't seen his most recent direct, I want to say it was direct to video, called A New Daughter. I haven't seen it yet. It's in my instant queue, but the reason I haven't watched it yet is because it's a scary movie and I hate scary movies.
I tried to watch Waterworld the other day, and after two suicide attempts, I turned it off.
I love that movie. The Postman, Wyatt Earp. I love all his stuff. I don't know. I'm an unabashed fan of Kevin.
But it's because of your love for him that you love
these. Yeah, probably. Dude, there were some great things about Wyatt Earp. I mean, that was a good adaptation of that character's story.
There were some very good things about it, but
overall,
in the year that between the two,
Tombstone killed it.
Tombstone so much better.
I don't know.
It's like the Armageddon to the Deep Impact. It's you know like the, it's it like is. The volcano over Dante's Peak.
It's like Ants to Bug's Life.
What's funny though,
no, it's like
about
Bug's Life to Ant.
Both of those movies, I think
watch
that,
your tongue.
That Val Kilmer and Dennis Quaid as help me out, to somebody. What's
Doc Holliday?
Yeah, yeah. Both of those roles were awesome. They both did such
yeah,
a
I
good
think without
job.
Tombstone, people would remember, you know, Dennis Quaid more.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because both of them were really
yeah,
strong.
They were.
I totally agree.
So, Dave, you've got something exciting
I do,
for us.
I do. So, let's do it.
Oh, Lord.
It's, of course, our semi-weekly feature, Tone Loke Watch. We are committed to keeping you up to date with the comings and goings of Wild Thing rapper Tone Loke. Wild Thing rapper Tone Loke was in a Los Angeles courtroom on Thursday with a 45-year-old MC, born Anthony Smith, pleaded not guilty to felony possession of an assault weapon and a domestic violence charge.
Oh, no.
Of course, we reported here, the newscast reported it first, by the way, that Loke was arrested last month for suspicion of felony domestic violence following an alleged altercation with the mother of one of his children. According to DMZ, police found an unregistered military-grade assault rifle, which, by the way, that was a semi-automatic Colt AR-15 Sporter, during their investigation into the incident on June 18th. So they went to the investigate the domestic violence charge, and they found the semi-automatic Colt AR-15 Sporter. He is slated to return to court in the case on July 28th. Actually, we have been talking about, and unfortunately, fans, I don't know that we're going to be able to do this, but we've been talking about sending a Deucecast representative out there to the court proceedings with our camera and with our remote. To,
at least an yeah, artist. At least an artist. At least a court
to be
artist.
Able to kind of report from there. I don't know that we're going to be able to do that yet. We're getting there, though. But we at the Deucecast are committed to bringing you the latest in the life of one of our most precious American treasures. That is this week's Tone Loke Watch. Matt, Uncharted.
I hope Anthony Smith can turn his life around.
I as do I.
Oh, gosh. Tone Loke. Okay, guys, Uncharted. For those of you who are video game fans, okay, I got two slightly video game related, and one of them is very, very fast. I just read an article, and it was an interview with Daniel Craig regarding Cowboys and Aliens. They said that when they were making that movie, that he and Jon Favreau were playing through Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, yeah, I read that too.
And I thought that was pretty cool because that is one of my favorite all-time video games, and which I borrowed from Michael and played and then gave back to him.
I think I sold it.
Which I think you played like 10 minutes of it.
Already sold
but,
it.
But anyway, I thought that was pretty sweet.
Well, you got to get money to buy all
second,
this equipment.
Exactly.
That's right. Second piece of news, for any of you guys following it, you guys have probably heard that David O. Russell, director and writer of The Fighter, and several other movies, most of which are less known. But The Fighter, you know, which was, of course, Academy Award nominated and people love Christian Bale in and whatnot. Never seen it yet. But he was set to direct and write the Uncharted movie. Of course, it was a very, very high profile game adaptation. It's a huge seller video game. Every you know, version that comes out, every sequel is highly anticipated. But there were several things about his version of the game or version of the game to movie that were seeming pretty crappy. Number one, he was insisting on Mark Wahlberg starring as Nathan Drake. For those of you that know anything about Nathan Drake, Mark Wahlberg is pretty much nothing. Yeah. I mean, outside of being a different race or something like that, he is absolutely nothing like, you know, Nate Drake. Nathan Drake, most people connect Nathan Fillion, if you guys are familiar with Nathan Fillion, star of Firefly, Castle. He's in tons of crap, mostly his bit parts or, you know, obscure characters. But he's very sarcastic, kind of got a kind of, you know, odd wit. You know, kind of quirky sort of, but still, you know, got rugged good looks or whatever. But anyway, new director is taken over. David O. Russell is out. New director is Neil Berger, director of Limitless and The Illusionist and some other movies I can't think of. Yeah. And I mean, I think he did some pretty cool stuff. He wrote The Illusionist. He did not write Limitless. Mm. So, which I think Limitless is well directed. My qualms with the movie are more in the actual screenplay, than anything else, probably. The direction's good. But anyway, he is rewriting, totally taking this thing from scratch. That means probably no Mark Wahlberg.
That's a good thing.
And that means a potentially great movie, yeah, as all properties that are adapted start out.
I think it's going to be a good opportunity to try and revitalize Mark Singer's career. So I'm hoping Mark Singer gets cast as Nathan.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be great.
I'm hoping for Gary Graham.
Oh,
myself.
Yeah, Gary Graham. That's a good choice.
So, because I think if Neil Berger goes back and does some review of Robot Jocks, I think that he'll see a star.
You know who else would be good in this role? Eric Dane.
Oh, good grief.
Eric Dane would be good in this role. And speaking of Eric Dane, it's a perfect opportunity to bring up this week's Grey's Anatomy Watch.
Kill me.
Word has just leaked out today that McSteamy, Eric Dane, playing Dr. Mark Sloan on Grey's Anatomy, has checked himself into rehab.
I just took a McSteam.
Has checked himself into rehab. The drug of choice is pain medication, which he apparently became hooked on after getting prescribed to treat a sports injury. He's been in L.A.'s Hills Treatment Center for about a month, so he's nearing the time of his rehab stint. And it looks like he's getting clean now for his second child that he and his wife, Rebecca Gayhart, are now expecting.
Dude, she's messed up now.
Of course, Eric Dane does play Dr. Mark Sloan. That's actually McDreamy you got there, Sean. Sean's trying to pull up pictures. That's McDreamy. McSteamy is the other one. That's Patrick Dempsey. We're talking about Eric Dane.
Okay, hey, Dave, yes. I need to know this. What? Okay, how is the difference? Like, in the show, do they call them?
Well,
McSteamy,
here's
McDreamy?
The thing. In season one, when Meredith and Derek Shepherd hooked up, her
Matt,
friends.
Why did you even ask?
Her
Matt?
Friends.
No, I want to know this so I can make fun of
her. Her friends called him McDreamy. Oh my gosh, he's McDreamy, whatever. Well, season two, Dr. Mark Sloan came along.
Is his name Mick something?
No, it's Derek Shepherd. In season
so
two,
made it
Dr.
Up.
Mark
they
Sloan came along. Well, it's a playoff of McDreamy. Christina Yang and Izzy and the other friends, they called him McSteamy instead of McDreamy. So, you know, it kind of just kind of played off the nickname and everything. So that's kind of how
they still
out.
They still use those?
Not really. I mean, they do, but it's not. I mean, it's not really.
Well, I've got a.
It's more for like People Magazine.
Yeah,
Weekly.
Yeah. It's easier to write out McSteamy than it is Eric Dane or McDreamy than it is Patrick Dempsey.
Is
yes.
Sandra Oh's character Mick Ugly?
Is no, what, she is no? actually she's actually she is actually Dr. Sandra Oh. Sandra Oh. Dr. Christina Yang.
Make homely.
She's Christina Yang, okay. And she's she's Meredith Grey's person. So
yeah, that's good.
You
know.
But anyway, that's been Seagal Watch. Ha! That has been Grey's Anatomy Watch this week, and I thank you, Matt, for letting me talk longer about Grey's Anatomy because it was going to be over like 3 minutes ago. So
please, Matt.
I had to get the info.
Well,
sorry,
any questions you have about
sorry,
it,
Mike.
I will love to, I would love to answer. And I will say, don't forget to tune in September as season 8 premieres as we find out what happens. To Seattle Grace Mercy West after the big shootout. And that was an emotional episode. My wife cried during that episode. It was pretty terrifying. You know.
Hopefully that was the porn I was talking about.
And of course, you're listening right now to Cozy and the Rocket by PSAP. You can also find this on the Grey's Anatomy soundtrack. And we're going to link to this song on the Deucecast website.
Do you say it's called PSAP?
PSAP. PSAC is something that... Well, okay, never mind.
Matt,
all right.
Please save us with Seagal Watch.
Yes, give us the McAwesome.
Okay, well, hey, I've got both of these things are related, awesome. But one is not related to Seagal, so I'm going to say it first. Okay, first thing, I don't know if you guys knew this, but I think it's pretty awesome. Okay, for the Avengers movie, the voice of the Hulk is Lou Ferrigno.
Oh, no way.
That's awesome.
Did you know that?
Well,
Yeah.
Does he have the best, like, voice talent, though? I mean, I don't...
No,
yeah, that's what
it's totally for just like
so
fan.
It's just gonna be him going like
yeah
grunting.
His voice doesn't have to be understandable
but he's got a lisp
but
so
I think
it'll
be
Hulk Smash.
I think it'll be pretty similar. I mean it makes sense because the Hulk would be hard to understand.
That's
probably
true.
So really they just have Ferrigno just talk normally.
Yeah, exactly
yeah,
say Hulk Smash.
Hulk Smash.
Perfect. Good job, Frig.
But as far as news goes, and as far as Seagal Watch
right.
goes, okay, we have to dedicate this section of the show, this final final few moments to the most important person that's out there, that's Steven yes. Seagal himself. And this week, of course, begins Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah.
And Comic-Con is huge. Yes, yes. Okay, Comic-Con is where they reveal all the new information about all kinds of awesome stuff. They revealed the new Spider-Man trailer. They got new information on The Dark Knight Rises. They got new information on The Avengers and whatnot. And one big thing that is being unveiled this week is comic writer Russ Kazmierczak is—he's the head. He's about to head west from Arizona, where he lives, to San Diego to show off his Amazing Arizona Comics number 4, which features stories about current events and politics in Arizona. The newest of which features, and I quote, Amazing Arizona Comics number 4 is a flip book. Oh. And in the lead story, a jealous Lou Ferrigno, recently deputized by Sheriff Joe Arpaio, tried to trump fellow celebrity law enforcer Steven Seagal by busting crooks on the Mexico border. And a local superhero, Dust Devil, tries to control the chaos.
Captain Chaos.
So it looks like the chaos... It looks like the chaos is being created by both Lou Ferrigno and Steven Seagal, and Dust Devil has to come in and control the chaos, quote unquote. Awesome. So that's our news regarding Steven Seagal. Of course, we're always on the watch. And as far as the Seagal of the week goes,
is there any like desert themed or like takes place in the desert Seagal movies that you can think of off the top of your head?
I can't think of one that's specifically desert, but probably we'll say one that is in tundra rather than desert.
That's fine. That's
That would be On Deadly Ground. Yes. That would be that also starring Michael Caine, where Seagal is a... that's another environmental, like oil drilling related movie where it's lots of explosions of oil rigs at the very end. But Seagal goes and has a an Eskimo like drug dream and suddenly becomes loyal to the local Inuit population. So that will be, of course, that will be our Seagal of the Week on Deadly Ground.
You can find us on the interweb at www.thedeucecast.com. Find us on Facebook at The Deuce Cast and also on Twitter. Tell a friend about us. So we want the people to hear about us. You know, let them know, hey, friend, these guys are awesome. They got an awesome producer. He's sexy and hot and single named Sean. Or, hey, friend, these guys are losers. You're going to want to listen to them. You know what? We'll take it either way. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. 205-6269-386 is our phone number. Next week on The Big Three, the topic is our favorite movies of the last 5 years. You're going to find even more fun and frivolity as well on Deucecast Episode 17, The Fellowship of the Podcast. Look out for the Harry Potter cast as well. We're going to do a separate podcast giving all the Harry Potter information you want to know. We'll talk about the series as a whole, the movie, spoilers, who died, who didn't die, who should have died, and who shouldn't have died, and that kind of thing. So just listen up for that. Watch that on iTunes. Download that. Probably a 30-minute podcast you can shoot right through. Anyway, let's close this thing out. I am your host, Dave, bidding adieu. Also saying goodbye to Matt up in the Noog.
See ya.
And this is Mike, and you've just taken your weekly deuce.